Let it be. Just so you know, Mother Mary was Paul McCartney's beloved mother, who passed away when he was a teenager. And we're going to talk about another mother named Mary later in the service, who also had to learn to let it be. My grandfather in Spartanburg was a devout Southern Baptist. His father and grandfather and brother were all Southern Baptist ministers. But my grandmother was a Christian Scientist. Because my brothers and I were being raised as third-generation Christian Scientists, Granddad was under strict orders not to give us any religious instruction. But the day came when he just couldn't hold back. That was the day I called my brother Arthur a fool. If you grew up in a Bible-believing church, you know where this is going. As Granddad sputtered and muttered, I remembered, "Oh yeah, the Bible says if you call your brother a fool, you're in danger of hellfire." And I just literally called my brother a fool. So Granddad could hardly let the moment pass. But eventually, he was able to let it be. We moved on and never spoke of this incident again. Just this week, I looked up the verse in Matthew and discovered the word fool is variously translated as empty-headed idiot and moron. And if that's true, a lot of people on the internet are going to need to buy some asbestos boots. I believe in a deeper meaning of the passage, that it just isn't the act of murder that leads to suffering. We also need to give up the anger and hatred that sometimes lead to murder. And there's another deeper meaning that I learned when I was a student of Christian Science, and I still believe it. According to one interpretation, the meaning of the word that is translated as fool can be understood to mean someone who is worthless or beyond redemption. And by redemption, I mean turning away from hatred, anger, and destructive behavior, and leading a life of kindness, respect, and love. If we say of someone, anyone, there's no hope for them, they're worthless, they're beyond redemption, we are subscribing to the very essence of hate in our own hearts, which is, if you think about it, a kind of hellfire. In practical terms, not giving up on people means no death penalty. And it means giving prisoners education, counseling, and modeling the kind of kindness that we hope they will practice when they are released. Unitarian Universalists believe in a lot of different stuff, but you'd be hard-pressed to find one who literally believes in hell. But if you do, it's okay. We all have things in our lives that upset us. The healing comes in how we process those events. Sorry to say, there's not a pill for that. And here I need to pause, because I will cause a lot of consternation and confusion if I use the F word. The F word, of course, is forgiveness. Did you think I was going to say fool? Forgiveness. People in the upstate and Charleston have much reason to ponder this over the last few years. Dylan Roof was sentenced to death for the murder of 9 members of Mother Emanuel Church in Charleston. In the upstate, Todd Kohlhepp has confessed to unspeakable crimes over a span of 13 years, including at least 7 members. The survivors in Charleston amaze the world. We're still in awe. when they proclaimed forgiveness. Although Dylann Roof wrote in his journal that he wasn't sorry for killing those innocent people, and he called them innocent. Forgiveness of such crimes is not whisking away a fly. It's not a throwaway murmur of, no problem. There's all the sadness and anger the survivors feel, the regret, the self-recrimination. There's grief, deep, heaving sobs of grief that just won't go away. And then, possibly, forgiveness. Not everyone makes it to forgiveness, but for those who discover it, it is a release. Not from sadness, but from the anger that is like a ferret under the tunic, gnawing your guts out. When we see forgiveness by those who suffer great harm, we are in awe. How can you forgive someone who's extracted from your family, your community, your circle of friends, a loss that can't be replaced? Forgiveness is sometimes a transaction, but it's always a release. As a release, it frees us from guilt, anger, and self-destructive desire for revenge. Forgiveness as a transaction depends on conditions. Was there an apology? Is the offender still alive? Do they accept my offer of forgiveness? Forgiveness that doesn't depend on these conditions, unconditional forgiveness, is always available for those who can find their way to it. Remorse, whether it meets with forgiveness or not, is also a release. We're not talking here about some pro forma apology calculated to gain a reduced sentence. We're not talking about a mere get off the hook apology. We're talking about throbbing surrender to self-knowledge, an acceptance of responsibility, and the struggle to make amends. This act of transformation is rare and more mysterious than the astounding act of forgiveness by Mother Emanuel survivors. There's nothing more human than the flesh and blood transaction between two human beings, one offering repentance and the other forgiveness. Terry Guy said he wanted to forgive Todd Culhepp, the man who confessed to killing his wife and three others in a motorcycle shop 15 years ago. He said, I'd like to tell him I forgive him and that God can forgive him. It's going to be a long process, and he'll have to pay for what he's done here on earth. But this person still doesn't have to go to hell. Through this example and the example of the Mother Emanuel survivors, we can see forgiveness at work. With rare exceptions, once an offender has paid a debt to society, he or she is released regardless of his state of mind. When Todd Culhepp was a teenager convicted of kidnapping and rape, a pre-sentencing report said, one can only speculate as to where the defendant's behavior will lead. It is this type of individual with little or no conscience who presents the greatest risk to the community. Todd Culhepp served his full 15-year sentence for kidnapping and raping a 14-year-old girl and was released and given a second chance whose promise he did not fulfill. Institutional forgiveness is hard. For those who carry out judgments on our behalf, we can only wish wisdom, kindness, and clarity, and for ourselves to forgive and be forgiven. In preparing for this sermon, I came across a book called The Forgiveness Project: Stories, for a vengeful age. In it, a story is told by 40 people who suffered a variety of terrible crimes and their emotional journey afterwards. There's also testimony by some of those who were forgiven, how it changed them, and how they found a new way away from emotional and physical violence. Here are some comments from those who forgave. Jen Fury Jen Fury from South Africa said, "Forgiveness is the principal decision to give up your justifiable right to revenge." Madeline Black from England said, "They wouldn't know if I felt hate toward them, and the only person it was hurting was me." Anne Marie Hagen from Canada, "Now I see each inmate as someone's child." Joe Berry from Northern Ireland, "An inner shift is required to hear the story of the enemy." Samantha Lawler from the USA, "Forgiveness is not about forgiving the act, but forgiving the imperfections which are inherent in all of us." Katie Hutchison from Canada, "Forgiveness is heart work of the highest order." And Jeff Thompson from England, "I came to realize that if someone abused me 20 years ago and I didn't forgive them, they were still abusing me now, today. In fact, they were literally holding me in stasis." Forgiveness not only gives you power over the here and now, it also deems you impervious to your past. It literally allows you to dismantle historical trauma. And finally, Mary Johnson, Mother Mary, another Mother Mary from the USA, "I've learned that if you hold on to pain, it grows and grows. But if you forgive, you start to starve that pain and it dies. Forgiveness is pretty much saying, I give up holding on to that pain." In 1993, Mary Johnson's 20-year-old son was murdered by a 16-year-old named O'Shea Israel. During a court appearance, Mary said she forgave him because the Bible tells us to forgive, is what she said. But she recalls, "I hadn't actually forgiven. The root of bitterness ran deep. Anger had set in, and I hated everyone. I remained like this for years, driving many people away. But then, one day, I read a poem which talked about two mothers. One mother whose child had been murdered, and the other mother whose child was the murderer. It was such a healing poem about the commonality of pain, and it showed me my destiny." Mary Johnson went on to found an organization to support not only the mothers of murdered children, but the mothers of children who had taken a life. Mary said she knew she could not deal with those mothers if she hadn't forgiven O'Shea, who had killed her son. She met with him in prison for about 2 hours. She saw how sorry he was, and at the end of the meeting, she was genuinely able to say she forgave him. Here's her memory of what happened next. "When he left the room, I bent over saying, I just hugged the man who murdered my son. Then, when I got up, I felt something rising from the soles of my feet and leaving me. From that day on, I haven't felt any hatred, animosity, or anger. It was over." many of us, most of us, will never have to deal with such a terrible offense, such as the murder of a loved one, and thus may never have to bushwhack our way through such thickets of grief and anger. But we're all capable of holding grudges. We heard a story from Betsy about that. Grudge is one of those funny words in the English language that never shows up alone. It has a codependent attachment to the word hold. You hold a grudge or you don't hold a grudge. It can be a particular grudge or it can be a life practice. You hold grudges or you don't hold grudges. Grudges are so needy, you see. They always have to be held. Let's shake it loose a bit. When you let go of a grudge, where does it go? What happens if you open the screen door, nudge it out with your toe, and send it out into the wild? Does it show up in your neighbor's yard, mewing and whining until someone feeds it? Does it find its way to the park and hang out with other grudges? The grudges become feral and travel in packs. Should you have your grudges spayed or neutered? Actually, that might be a good place to start, because we don't want our grudges to multiply. Don't we always want to identify the wrong with a person? Of course, at the surface level, we can see a specific person wielding that knife, pulling the trigger, saying the words, forging a document. But if that's all we see, we're seeing symptoms, not the root cause. And what is that root cause? What I'm about to say will surprise you, perhaps shock some of you, and even to me, it sounds absurd. But here goes. I believe that every offense, ranging from littering to mass murder, is located on a single continuum of human behavior. Now, this is not to trivialize the damage of murder or genocide or magnify the problem caused by flipping a Milky Way wrapper on the State Park Road. What I'm saying is this: with each of these acts, we are separating ourselves from the community. We are denying our common humanity. When we harbor a grudge, we are not attacking the root cause of the offense. We are not dealing with that sense of separation. In fact, we may be advancing it. And before we can heal that sense of separation that others are harboring, we must overcome it in ourselves. That never means denying the offense. Instead, to achieve healing, we must recognize the hurt, feel the great heaves of sadness, and maybe even allow the heat of anger to pass through us. And if at last, through all the turmoil and smoke of battle, we see the silhouette of the enemy, we will know the enemy to be separation. And we will turn and seek those quiet moments where we can embrace that sense of oneness that will vanquish the enemy. We are all one community, one humanity, a human community of individuals. And though we are fallible, we all have the possibility to begin anew, to drop that sense of separation and find peace and move forward with a renewed purpose. And if we allow that possibility to ourselves, how can we fail to allow it to others? If we deny it to others, we are denying it to ourselves. Because are we not all made of the same stuff?